Now, anti-Semitic incidents increased across the U.S. last year at unprecedented levels. The country saw a 57% increase, the largest one-year increase since records started back in the 1970s, according to the Anti-Defamation League. The organization identified nearly 2,000 examples from 2017, including harassment, vandalism, and assault. Wisconsin also saw an increase, according to the Milwaukee Jewish Federation's Jewish Community Relations Council. Ilana Khan joins us now. She's the director of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation's Jewish Community Relations Council. Ilana, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me on.
Before we get into some more specific details, can you talk about the trends? I understand that reports of incidents had been going down up until the last couple of years.
Well, we've seen mostly a steady increase over the last few years. But I would say that between 2015 and 2016, we saw a huge jump. And then this year, also a jump, though, you know, not quite as extreme as last year. But so we saw a 30% increase between 2016 and 2017. And I can tell you about the process, because that's, of course,
yes, please,
a question, like, how do you count? But I could, let me just put that aside as I talk about the trends for a second. The trends that we noticed and are concerned about are, number one, I was stunned when I started to really parse the data and saw that what I expected was we see a lot of incidents among middle school and high school students. Accurate, totally accurate. About almost a quarter of incidents are with students on campus, middle school, high school, and college. Second trend was social media. I expected all these things. About a quarter of all incidents happen through social media. Like, that's huge and notable. What I didn't expect was that, and I was actually surprised, which, you know, I've done this for several years, was that the type of incident changed. So whereas we usually have the majority of anti-Semitic incidents are a form of expression. They're sort of general statements. You know, somebody puts a swastika somewhere. Somebody writes on Facebook, you know, Jews are this or Jews are that. But this year we saw an enormous increase, and the percentage was 150% increase in incidents categorized as harassment, threats, and assault. And what typifies those incidents is that they're personal. They're focused on a person or a group of people. They're not a general statement, but they're directed at somebody. So that's what has really surprised us this year. It's a different sort of tenor, a different quality of incidents, if you will.
Can you give us a couple of examples of the incidents that were reported when it comes to that in-person direct harassment?
Sure. So some of it's through letters. It's not in-person, but it's, you know, directed against a person. There were the bomb threats at the JCCs. We included those. There were four of them in Milwaukee at the Jewish Community Center in Milwaukee. But there was an 11-year-old child walking home from school when a driver passed by and shouted, "We hate Jews, let's kill them." There was an incident that we, at a middle school in, I was outside the Milwaukee area, actually, a middle school student drew a picture of his teacher and him, and we assume it was him, actually, I'm not sure it was him, and on one of the stick figures, there was a swastika drawn on the kid's forehead, and he was pointing a gun, and there were little signs of bullets coming out of the gun heading toward the teacher, who had a Jewish star on her head, and her name was written above. Just in case we didn't know he was talking about his teacher, her name was written above the figure with a Jewish star on her head. That was really disturbing. There were real repercussions because that teacher was afraid. There were swastikas drawn on children's binders in school. So that's different than, you know, a swastika on an elevator. This was like somebody went and said, "Here's a Jewish girl, and put a swastika on her personal belongings. Someone received five typed letters at her workplace that called her an effing Jewish bitch. I don't know if you beep that, but that's a female dog, yep. And expressing anger at Jews and government. And, of course, the irony was that she wasn't Jewish. But still, there was a call to a CEO of a Jewish organization, a voicemail that I heard, and it said, among other things, the caller said, pack up your bags with all of your other kikes and get the F out of our country. So it goes on. They were just aggressive, and sort of, I see it as the unmasking of hatred. It was like, usually it's a little more cloaked, and I really see that, you know, one of the things that was startling when we think about what happened in Charlottesville was that there were people without masks on saying these things that we've grown accustomed to seeing, hearing about with people wearing masks. They were hiding their identities. And that, it feels like the same, feel like a theme. But again, people were unafraid to say, yeah, I believe this.
Talking to Ilana Khan from the Milwaukee Jewish Federation's Jewish Community Relations Council about a jump in anti-Semitic incidents across the United States and here in Wisconsin. Ilana, I guess the obvious question is why? Why this change, this more open, personal expression of anti-Semitism?
Well, actually, I do want to say I got a call from somebody, an email from somebody from the Jewish community who said, because we've had a little bit of media coverage when we released the audit, who said, you know, things are really good for us here. So I should say, generally, this is a great time and a great place to be Jewish in this country now. So compared to other periods of history, this is not the worst, and nowhere near the worst. But I think that, I mean, your question is, of course, the question, and we can link the rise in anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic incidents with the rise of all kinds of incivility, all kinds of bigotry. And we see, it's not only us. We see a rise in racism. We see a rise in hostility directed against Muslims and against immigrants. It's, you know, it's the rising tide of bigotry. I think there's an overall sense of incivility, of people feeling like it's truth-telling to say what's on their mind. Rather than to, you know, having a filter is good. Having a filter is good, and then maybe also being in authentic relationships so that you can sort of confront your own biases. And we all have biases. So I think that we're just seeing generally in this country an emboldened and ugliness.
How do you confront that? How do you react to that?
Such a good question. Well, I am so fortunate to work for an organization whose entire purpose is building relationships, understanding that we're all in it together. So sometimes I'm going to call upon my allies and say, I need you to stand with me right now. This is an issue. But sometimes, a lot of the time, it means standing with other communities and other people to say, you know, we're your allies. I see you. I know you. So I get to. There's an entire field of community relations that's all about knowing the other. And we started. There are a few things. We are working right now. I'm trying to get funding actually for some special outreach to young people because we've realized that the way that we reached young people in schools is a little old. Is there a way to reach them about how to confront anti-Semitism, how to confront bigotry, to realize that racism and anti-Semitism they're both expressions of white supremacy, and what can we do to not be bystanders? And also to report those things. How do you identify what is acceptable and what is unacceptable? Because, by the way, a lot of incidents that get reported to us, we say, that is terrible. That person was really being a jerk. But that's not really anti-Semitism. That's just, you know, yucky. So the other thing, so we are working on materials and approaches to reach young people, number one. Number two, we see, I think the conversation about social media is, you know, it's not new. We're not inventing that, but really worth having. What is our responsibility? We have the right to say a lot of things. We also need to ask ourselves what responsibilities we have. And we've seen with the social media companies, like when Twitter banned congressional candidate Paul Nehlen after he's he's just expressed some awfulness over, you know, racism and anti-Semitism, and he finally got booted. We are bringing in a speaker on June 21st who has sort of who's directly confronted this online bigotry and anti-Semitism particularly. He's been called the digital Nazi hunter. His name is Yair Rosenberg. And finally, we have two projects that are proactive, relationship-driven, meaning life happens, attitudes are formed through one-on-one interactions. So one of them is called Hours Against Hate, and it is a personal call to action that individuals all have the power to confront bigotry and to create a more compassionate community by pledging an hour to somebody who's different than they are, to somebody who doesn't look like them, who doesn't live like them, who doesn't love like them, and who doesn't pray like them. So that's an ongoing initiative, and we have a new, last fall we launched Lunch Hours Against Hate. Most people take a lunch hour. Can we pledge 1 hour a month to knowing people who are different than we are?
We're talking to Ilana Khan right now, director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, talking about a jump in anti-Semitic incidents across the U.S. and in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered these anti-Semitic incidents in the state? Do you see, as our guest does, a rise in bigotry in general against many groups? Why do you think that's happening? What can we do about that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. At Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about anti-Semitism with Ilana Khan, director of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation's Community Relations Council. Numbers up in anti-Semitic reports of anti-Semitic incidents around the nation and in Wisconsin. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know experienced anti-Semitism in Wisconsin? Do you think things are worse in the last couple of years than they had been previously? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ilana, we have just a few minutes left. Can you tell us a bit about, you mentioned the method, how you gather these incidents?
So we receive incidents throughout the year. Some of them I get involved in. I'll be in touch with schools and say, hey, you know, this thing happened at your school. Try to hold them accountable, try to help them change the past. So throughout the year, we will be involved in incidents. Sometimes we just receive the incidents and record them. And then at the end of the year, at the beginning of the following year, actually, we have this discernment process. First of all, I look through them and I will knock out those that are obviously not anti-Semitism. And then we have a task force that looks at them, and then we have our board that looks at them, and they will sometimes disagree with each other. And then finally we have a community council, which is, I call it the parliament of the Jewish community, because we have seats, we have representatives from all the different, most of the synagogues and organizations have a seat on that body. And they have the last say if something is or isn't. And we are judicious. There is a burden of proof. There are lots of things that don't get included.
I want to bring in a caller briefly. Scott is with us in Wind Lake. Scott, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I was listening, and, I think there was a little segment there where you were talking and mentioning something about, is this something that's more recent or but what I was getting at is I do believe, when you take a look at, like, our own governor in the state, you know, he was going after teachers, and he openly said some things that I felt that a leader of the community shouldn't be saying, and I think that, it seems to me that our government officials have, over the years, seemed to become unmasked with what they say or unfiltered what they say.
Scott, thanks for the call. I want to bring Alana in. What do you look for from political leaders at any level of any party in terms of providing examples and leadership on this in our last minute or so, Alana?
Well, I think that's it's right. I think that we've I'm not going to talk about specific examples with the governor, but we saw it a lot with the president, who has said things that are, frankly, bigoted. So, yes, I think that we need to expect more of our elected officials and our civic leaders. We need to expect more, and I think that it's our responsibility, and we each have power, to contact them and say, you need to do better. Like, this is unacceptable. This is not, you know, I want to admire you. I want you to be a role model. I want you to show me what we can be. So I think that we need to hold them accountable to be the kind of, to help us create the kind of communities we want to create.
And briefly, Alana, we're early in 2018. Are you seeing any signs of improvement?
It's hard to say. I've had probably already 10 incidents, but it's hard to discern what's there. We've had some. I'm going to be optimistic, and I really do think that people are shocked by the level of discourse in the country. And I think that there is. I think the silver lining is that people are coming together and speaking out and saying this isn't normal and it isn't okay. So I'm optimistic that people will come together and realize all of the isms are linked, and when we allow hatred to flourish, we all lose.
Ilana, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Ilana Khan. She's director of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation's Jewish Community Relations Council. She joined us to talk about the rise in reported anti-Semitic incidents last year across the country and similar numbers here in Wisconsin. Governor Walker is expected to sign a measure that would make it easier to fill in many acres of smaller wetlands in Wisconsin. Conservation groups are still trying to convince Walker not to approve the Republican-backed legislation and say the bill would just add to several existing threats to wetlands, including threats like climate change. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Over the last two centuries, Wisconsin has already lost nearly 50% of its original 10 million acres of wetlands. The DNR says in southern Wisconsin, the amount gone is well over 75%. An appreciation of the remnants, or what's left, comes across in Pat Truckle's voice as she leads a tour of the Scuppernong Prairie State Natural Area in western Waukesha County.
The prairie drop seed here.
Yeah.
I love this, and then with these little depressions between the prairie drop seed. Have water in them.
Right.
The little clumps of grass known as prairie drop seed are just some of the important plants in this combination prairie and wetland, or what's called a wet mesic prairie. Truckle is a retired DNR biologist. She and current DNR biologist Corey Peters go on to praise the Scuppernong Prairie.
This type of wetland is so unique and so rare.
Remnants like this, they're just not out there. Especially in this part of the state with the land use you can see around here.
Their enthusiasm for Scuppernong comes as some say the state is facing a major challenge to a sizable chunk of its wetlands, so-called isolated wetlands not linked to bodies of water and not under federal protections. State lawmakers last week passed a bill that would exempt development of one-acre wetlands in urban areas from a DNR permitting process. Though Senate President Roger Roth said the measure is needed to help business cut through red tape, he also told colleagues the measure would be pro-environment.
Under this bill, we incentivize that development to happen right in your cities, in your villages, so we can protect against urban sprawl.
Roth says farmers and other rural residents would be able to develop up to 3 acres of wetlands, but he adds that both urban and rural developers may have to create other wetlands elsewhere, depending on the size of the project. Passage of the bill was not warmly greeted at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association conference late last week in Lake Geneva.
A fairly significant rollback to the protections that we had on the books.
That's Erin O'Brien, Policy Programs Director of the Wetlands Association. She says losing as much as 100,000 acres of small wetlands would be a problem.
these very small areas add up abundantly on the landscape to provide very important protective services to our communities, most importantly, flood storage and reduction of peak flows during severe weather, which of course we're seeing more of lately.
Many scientists say the bouts of severe weather may be linked to climate change. Retired at UW-Madison limnology professor John Magnuson is with the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. He says he expects more warming and an increase in extreme weather events. Magnuson says wetlands should be able to help during the heavy rain where they still exist.
Most of the wetlands have been eliminated from the Lake Mendota watershed, and so already we've lost some of those protective values in all of those regards.
Climate change may not only increase the need for wetlands to soak up downpours, it could also produce extended droughts. Gary Sullivan is a restoration ecologist with a Chicago nonprofit, the Wetlands Initiative. He says some of the work he does is changing the topography to keep water on site.
So it's losses through evaporation as opposed to drainage. Then you have a much better chance of keeping those wetlands wet. You know, the goal would be to keep them wet long enough for the many different animals that depend on them, especially things like frogs and salamanders to breed in.
Sullivan says some wetlands won't need a makeover overnight. But with a changing climate, he predicts many more will need the help over the next 30 to 50 years. Chuck Quernbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up Monday on Central Time, from the Black Lives Matter movement to recent pushes for gun control from the students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, youth have been at the center of recent protests. We'll look at the history of young people in social change efforts. A new program in Wisconsin provides trained peer coaches to people working to recover from opioid addictions. We'll meet some of the people involved in that effort. That and a look at some of the top news of the day. It's all coming up Monday here on Central Time.